Okay. Good morning, all. It's nice to be back here again, and it's truly appreciated that you've asked me another time. The topic is meant to be some secrets from the Megillah. As you'll probably well appreciate, we can't complete the topic in half an hour. What we're going to do is have just a general look at some interesting points. And as they tend to come from the Yechkam Ode, hopefully you'll follow the derech and learn all sorts of other items as well. Now, running through the Megillah, everyone knows there's many, many different themes. You've got the theme, obviously, Mechias Amalek, that's a very potent theme. You've got the theme of the Gemilas Chesed of Mordechai and Esther compared with the selfishness of Haman. And you've got all sorts of subplots, etc., the Nesva Teva, and all these different themes are running through the Megillah. But if you had to choose one major item of the Megillah, I think the Gemara itself says it in the case of the name of the Megillah, which is Esther, which is because of Hastir, Astir, Ponah, Mehem, the idea of everything being hidden. Everything in the Megillah has been changed, the names of all the parties have been changed, nobody's ever heard of Ahasuerus in the non-Jewish annals. There's Xerxes, there's Artaxerxes, there's Cambyses, there's Darius, there's all sorts of different Persian kings, but nobody quite knows exactly who this Ahasuerus is. In fact, there's a Balamor about it somewhere who tries to identify him, but it doesn't really have much point in doing so because it's quite irrelevant. And similarly, nobody's ever heard of a queen called Vashti. Esther wasn't her real name. The Megillah itself says that her name was Hadassah. Mordechai had two other names. Good quiz question that. What were Mordechai's other two names? Obviously, one was Bilshon, one was Tzachia. He wasn't known as Mordechai. The supposition is that the real name was Marduk. He'd been given a Persian name, and they decided to change it to Mordechai, which to fit in with the famous Targum in Parashas Kisiso next week, with his name was Miro Dachio, beautiful smelling, etc. But everything's been changed. Hasoch is not Hasoch. He's Donir, according to some. Mumuchon, all these different names represent other things. So there's a Hester here. If I had to encapsulate the Megillah in one single word taken from the Megillah, the word I would have chosen would be Venapoch. And that's possibly the reason for this interesting song which they sing, and I won't try and repeat it here, but you know which one I'm referring to. And if you take the gematria of the word Venapoch, guess what you get? You get the total of the number of psukim in the Megillah. So these type of ramosim are abound everywhere in Tanakh, but particularly so in the Megillah. We have 167 psukim, and if you count the word Venapoch, you'll see it comes correctly. Now, another theme which is running through the Megillah, which I want to just look at briefly, because there are some very interesting ones to it, is the idea of schar v'onesh. You get what's due to you, that you get your comeuppance, as Haman did, mido k'neged mido. And the word which represents that is the word don. Now, this takes me back to where I was here last time. I made one error last time, and I want to correct it. I thought I'd just try and work it in somehow. And the error was if there is a posuk for the name of Don. I said there wasn't. I'd like to correct my previous statement saying there's no name for Don in most Sidurim, but there is a posuk for Don in Chumash, which is therefore doubly confusing. If there is such a posuk in Chumash itself, and Parshas Maaseh, if you want the exact reference, I did write it down, it is in chapter Lamed Hei of Bamidbar, Posse Gud, Daber B'nei Yisrael V'amartu Aleim Ketem Ovi Mesayadin Altso Kena'an. So there's a posuk for Don, so why did they have to use the other posuk of Don Yodin Amma, which doesn't end with a nun? I've got no real answer to that, but except to say perhaps this is part of the remez which I mentioned last time, that Don really has his own name, it just has to bring out his potential. It's rather hidden, and the Siddurim decided to hide the fact that there was such a posuk. You'll find certain Siddurim, old Siddurim, where there's such a posuk does exist, but in most of the modern Siddurim where they've got lists of names, that posuk is not brought down, and it's quite confusing as to why not. But just to correct the fact that there is such a posuk. And the other thing I left out last time was to point out that Don was the Ma'asev L'chol HaMachanos. He's right at the back, sweeping everything up. Now that word don means justice. It means that you get what's due to you. And in the Megillah you find the word don does occur in various forms. First, you'll find that whenever Esther talks about destruction, she talks about Avdon, Dalad Nun at the end, Avdon, to destroy things. However, whenever Haman talks about destroying the Eden, it's Abdom, with a Dalad Mem. Now that's significant, because the Dalad Mem, that means he's trying to get the blood of the Eden, he's really, there's no justice in it whatsoever. As you know, Halacha Esav Sonis Yaakov. And when the guy tries to hurt the yid, there's no particular rhyme or reason or justice to it. It's just simply he's out for their blood, abdom. There's about four places in the Megillah. I have the references if you want to. But as you listen to the Megillah, you'll hear it. However, when Esther talks, it's not abdom, it's always of dan moladati. Well, there are grammatical reasons for it too, but it is significant that the word don occurs in the right places. Now, the word don has a gematria of 54. And that number of 54 is remarkable how many times you find it in the Megillah. Every different number has its own significance, and different places you find different things. I think I mentioned once before that Yosef always used to have a number 5, etc., etc. But the number in the Megillah seems to be 54. If you count up the number of times that Haman's name occurs in the Megillah, it is exactly 54 times. We've had it checked. I got the boys in school to do it. We're going to keep them out of mischief. They came out with various different numbers as they were counting, but eventually the tally was proved to be 54. Now, if you count up the number of times that Esther occurs in the Megillah, it's 55. Now, that tells you very significantly, Esther was one up on Haman. That's quite simple. Now, somebody then argued with that and said, but Haman has three nicknames. One nickname which occurs three times. And according to one medrash, the word Memuchon refers to Haman, who was Muchon le Puronius. Once he's written with a Kleenex, said Mumkan, Mumkan, that's part of his name, was sort of, the vav was swapped round to show that he was not the most delightful character, but the name was Memuchon, and that occurs three times. Now, if you add 54 plus 3, that gives you how much? 57. Well, no problem. If you count it the number of times Mordechai occurs in the Megillah, it's 58. So, whichever way you look at it, Mordechai beats Haman with his nicknames, Esther beats Haman without the nickname. So, that's again an interesting piece of information, but it's more than that. Have you ever counted up the number of letters in the sons of Haman? Guess how many? 54. There are 54 letters in the sons of Haman, Parshan Dosa, Parmashta, and all that crowd. If you add them all up, you'll find there are 54 letters altogether, which is again significant that they got their don, they got judged accordingly. Well, it doesn't stop there either, because if you take perhaps the most happy pasuk in the Megillah, the pasuk which we all say in Havdalah, La'ihudim hoits over the Sakh of Simcha Vikor, take the Rosh Tavis, again, guess how much? 54. Like if you add them up, the gematria of the Rosh Tavis of that famous pasuk which we all say. I remember once lending the Megillah in a place called Zagreb, and we had to read probably, and I was getting rather carried away reading the Megillah, and when I finished the pasuk, I said, came to Yalonu. Be careful if you're it messes up the gematria. This phenomenon was well known to the Vilna Gaon, because according to him, you have to change the wording of the Bimei Mordechai. We have actually 56 words in Bimei Mordechai. That's something to do, because you've got to add up to Al Anisim and you'll get the different gematria. But the Gaon said that if you add up Bimei Mordechai, there's too many words. You have to leave two out, because you have to have 54 words in Bimei Mordechai. So anybody who follows the Shittas Agro will know that instead of saying, as we do, Hashevoso es gumulo al rosho, the Gaon's Girsa is Hashevoso gumulo barosho, thereby taking out the S and the Al, and that brings it down to 54, and that's exactly the right number of words. And he also says, another gematria, this is remes to the Pasuk of Hoshev gumul al geyim. Geyim is also 54, which refers to the same idea of the judgment which the person gets if you don't behave yourself correctly. And as we've been talking about the Aseret B'nei Haman, it doesn't stop there. If you take the 50th letter of the B'nei Haman, can you tell me what the 50th letter of the B'nei Haman is? Well, it's obviously the fourth from the end, and the last name of the last chap was called Vaiazoso. What's special about the form of Vaiazoso?
It's small.
It's not small. It's long. It's elongated. And the Gemara says, why was the form of Vaiazoso elongated? Because Vav looks like a gallows, shape of a gallows is hanging over. And this is a remnant, says the Gemara, this long Vav, the Gemara itself says that they were all hanged on the gallows. Well, isn't it significant that it's the 50th letter, because the gallows was 50 yamas high? So it goes together. That actually comes from the Rokeach, it's not my own. Most of the things have been found elsewhere. Another beautiful thing from the Rokeach is this. You remember the famous Gemara which says, how on earth could Mordechai stamp on the back of Haman? Because when he got up, you're not allowed to make fun of your enemies. But it says, don't be happy with your enemies. So how could he do it? And so the Gemara, Rishoyim is different. The Avod Rishoyim Rino. With the destruction of Rishoyim, it's a great happy event. And therefore, you're allowed to have the joy. Would you believe it? If you take the Rosh Tavis of the 10 sons of Haman, it comes to 255, which is of course Rino. Add them up, you'll find them all there. You add them all up, it comes to 255. Take the last letters of the 10 sons of Haman. There are 7 Aleph's, 2 Yuds and a Nun. The 2 Yuds and a Nun obviously represent Yayin, and the 7 Aleph's represent the word Abed. And what was in the middle? Rishoyim. So you've got Rino, Rishoyim, Abed, Al-Dayayin. So the 10 sons of Haman are telling you very clearly that you can destroy the Rishoyim and be quite happy about it, because the actual gematria of the Rashi Tavis and the Sosei Tavis all tell us that feature. That's again also from the Rokeach, but it's a really, really quite a beautiful one. Things which are not in the Meforshim are other ideas relating to other aspects of the Megillah which particularly interest me, such as the length of Psukim and the number letters, etc. The number of Psukim I've mentioned already is 167, but this is mentioned in the Meforshim, and some say that there's only 166, not 167. There seems to be an argument as to how many Psukim there are. We have 167, but some say 166, and that fits in with the number of words which are in the Parsha of Amalek in the Torah. It fits in, it corresponds absolutely. If you add the Psukim in the Torah in Pesharak and Vayetze, it comes to the same number of 166 words in that particular parasha. And similarly, if you take Halel HaGodol, which was the antithesis of Haman, it also has the same number. The number of letters, I've never checked this, but I'm told that Rabbi Weissmandel, our son, Torah Chemed, says if you take the number of letters in the Megillah in total is 12,110. It sounds about right. From the 10 chapters with about 20 psukim in each chapter, and multiply it by the average number, it seems to work out roughly. If anybody's got a computer, can check it out, I'd be interested to hear. But he says there's 12,110 letters. Now, if you start from the mem of Mordechai, Miradachia, and add 12,110 letters, you come to a resh. Do it again, you come to a dala. Do it again, you come to a chof. And do it again, you come to a yud. So when the Gemara says Mordechai min ha-toiro minayin, which we normally try and also give all sorts of explanations of how do you understand Mordechai in the Torah from Miradachia, this actually adds another knetch to it, because what it means is Mordechai is actually inscribed in the Torah. You can find him in the Torah if you look. All you start off is start from Moradro and count the number of letters of the Megillah 5 times over, and you work out the probability graph on that, and you'll find it to be one in billions, and yet it works out Mordechai. So says the Torah Chemed. Similarly with Esther, you can't do that for Esther. You know why you can't do it for Esther? Because if you start from Esther, you'd go beyond the end of the Torah, so you can't do that. So if you can't start there and go beyond the end of the Torah, you must start somewhere else. Well, it's very simple. You start from the Aleph of Bereishis and do the same trick, and you come to a Samach, which is a very rare letter, because there are about 40 or 50,000 Vavs in the Torah, but only about 1,300 Samach. So the probability graph is improved tremendously, because it's Aleph of Bereishis, you go to the Samach, and you get a Tof, and you get a Reish. You take the two together, Esther and Mordechai together, that should have happened by coincidence, is something out of this world. The only thing is I haven't actually checked to see whether it fits, but that if the Rabbi said it does, you can rely upon it. So you're seeing that the letters and the psukim actually have a much deeper significance. I haven't checked it with words yet, but I'll leave that for somebody to see if it can work out how many words are on the Megillah and what the relevance of that is. It's really something for somebody else to do. Now, the longest psukim in Tanakh are both, the two longest psukim in Tanakh are well known, are both in the Megillah. One is 43 words and one is 40 words. You don't come close to that. In Chumash, the longest pasuk, it has 34 words. Yes, 34 words. And this is 43, so it's 9 words longer than the longest pasuk in Chumash. They're both talking about sending out letters to Haman's letters and Mordechai's letters. The number 40 is again a very significant number, because the idea of 40 being the 40 days and 40 nights Moshe Rabbeinu was mekabel the Torah, and in other words the 40 was coming to be mekatrik against Klal Yisrael, that if they didn't keep the Torah properly then they would have the punishment, which is what Haman was threatening Klal Yisrael with. However, when they got Mordechai sent out his letters, he adds in 3 more words, and those extra 3 words have 2 possibilities. Either it represents the 3 sets of the times that Moshe Rabbeinu went up, the 3 times 40, that's one possibility, so that the first time they ended up with the Eagle, that's why there was trouble, but the third time it ended up with Yom Kippur, and therefore they had the full Kapora, and that's why everything was okay. It's one pshat. And the other pshat is that the kitrug of the 40 of Haman was put right by the 3 days fast of Esther, the fasted for 3 days. So those 3 days added to the 40 are the counterpart of the previous 40, and that's how they got out of it. Now, just following that, we then find another pasuk which has the whole of the Aleph Beis in it. The whole of the Aleph Beis is in the next pasuk following that. And this phenomenon of the Aleph Beis occurs 25 times in Tanakh, twice in Chumash, 23 times in Tanakh. There's only one place in the whole of Tanakh, which is not Megillat Esther, where you've got not only the 22 letters but also the 5 finals. You either know it or you don't know it. If you don't know it, then if you want to know it, I'll tell you afterwards. But there's one place in Tanakh where it's got all of 20 letters plus the 5 finals. In Megillat Esther you've got one example without the finals, but it's got all the letters. When it's got all the letters, that means all the letters are coming together for a purpose. And the purpose seems to be here compared with the purpose of the one in Chumash, which is in the chapter in Shemot Tez Zayin, Pasuk Tez Zayin of Bishalach, which is talking about the Mon. In the case of the Mon, all the letters of the alphabet combined in order to give Klal Yisrael the Parnosa which they required. And so the same thing in the Megillah, if you look at the context, you'll see they're all combined together in order to help Klal Yisrael in what they needed. Now that is documented in various places. There's one thing which I haven't seen documented, which always also intrigues me as well, is the neginas. As you know, there are many neginas which we sing in Chumash, in the 21 Sforim of Tanakh, leaving out the 3 MS Sforim which have a different cantillation, until we're not talking about Tehillah Mishleniyot. But in the other 21 Sforim, we have names for different neginas. Now the 3 neginas which are perhaps the rarest in Tanakh will be the Shalsheles. Shalsheles is 4 times in Chumash, 3 times in Tanakh, and doesn't occur at all in the Megillah. May I ask why not? The Meichoch Chafula, which occurs 5 times in Chumash and 9 times in Tanakh, 14 altogether. And the Yorech Ben Yoma and the Kane Fora, which occurs only once in Chumash, 15 times in Tanakh, but only once in the Megillah. The word counted for, just as in Chumash occurs once, in the Megillah it only occurs once. And the question is, what does this represent in the Megillah? I'm sure you all know where it is. It's a pasuk which is usually sung by the Baal Kreya, Gam Hine Hevet Asher Otsahar Mo Lema Adachai, you know, that sort of tune. The Shimon does a lot better than I do, the song. But you know what I'm talking about. Hamon Hine Asher Omon Omon Mordechai, and Haman has got this Kane Fora on it. Now the truth of the matter is that a Kane Fora probably was never such a nigger at all. It was probably a Poser Godo. There are plenty of riots that there used to be two posits, just like Rabbi Tishka Tan and Tishka Dodel. They've probably got a posit Kot and a posit Godel. But we don't call it a posit Godel anymore. We call it a Karnif Foro because it looks like a Karnif. And it's the, and its shape is a Tlisha Katano and a Tlisha Gadolo. Now I saw from Mr. Ellis Hillman, Zichron Levrocha, who was the son of the Dayan Hillman. He worked in the council, but he seems to spend most of his days writing Divrei Torah on our Cheshbon and Barnet council. And he used to write on the Megillah all sorts of interesting jottings, he used to call them. And these jottings turned up in some very, very peculiar places. I think one set of jottings actually turned up in the Jewish Chronicle one day, shows you where things get to. But anyhow, he on this particular point, he suggested that Haman actually has a Tlisha Katana and Tlisha Gedola on top of him, because the Tlisha Katana and Tlisha Gedola represent the two animals which Daniel dreamt about in the in one of his dreams, where he dreams about the ram and the goat which attacked each other, and the goat defeated the ram in that particular vision. The goat of course represents Yavon, and the ram represents Persia. And the suggestion is that what happened here, that Haman was the beginning of the disaster for Persia, and this is a remez that the power of Poras and Persia was going to be defeated, and it was going to be replaced by the power of Yavon shortly afterwards. So if you've got the Tlisha Gedola, which is at the beginning of the word, that's the one that goes that away, the Tlisha Gedola, which goes backwards starting off, and that's replaced by the Tlisha Katana on the other side of it, which represents the next people who are coming along. Now you might say, well, that's a bit fanciful, but it's not. If you look at the Megillah, it's a very, very difficult bit. We find at the beginning of the Megillah it's always Poras Umodai. Always Poras Umodai. Right? And yet at the end of the Megillah, all of a sudden, if you look at the last psukim, what's the last posuk say? Last few psukim? It tells you a very interesting piece. It says here, if you want to see the chol maasis sakvu gvorosa forashas kudulas mordechai shegidla amelech halohem ksum asev divriam lemalchem modai uporas. Now why is modern Poras being reverted? So his suggestion is because originally Poras was the power, and then that was replaced by the Modai later. So Poras starts off and Modai, which apparently has got some connection with the other one, that comes later. That's how he suggested. In fact, the Kasha is actually asked by the Gemara itself, believe it or not. The Gemara says, why is it in one place with Poras and one place is with Modai? Because they weren't, well, they wanted to put Poras next to the Malachim and Modai next to the Malachim and so on. So it has to have Malchi next to Modai in one place and Malchi next to Poras in a different place. So the Gemara actually does note this distinction and suggest a Mahalach, but it's not Pshat Mahalach, and the Pshat has to be that in one place is Poras and one place is Modai. Now Ellis Hillman goes a little bit further and he suggests another very interesting thing. He says at the beginning of the Megillah we talk of Chur Kar Pasut Cheles Achus Bechav Levut. So the Chul comes first, then there's Karpas in the middle, and then we've got Techeles. But when Mordechai goes out, it says Mordechai Yotzim Techeles for Chul. So what's going on here? Which is first and which is second? Whatever is mentioned first is usually more Choshev. So if it was more Choshev, why is it say it was offered with Chav Levut, etc., the Chul was first, yet over here it's not there? And also the question where the Karpas went to. Some people said it went into the Morah for Pesach, in fact, you look at the Targumim, some Targum actually put the Karpas back in again. But okay, I'm looking at the Chul and the Karpas, and one of his suggestions was like this: the flag of Poras he suggests was white, and the flag of Modai he says is turquoise, right? Karpas is green. Now in Islam, green is the holy colour. So he suggests that Karpas may have something to do with the Muslims and Islam, well, even though they haven't existed yet, but it's a remez to them that they would start off and they would disappear afterwards. That would be what the Karpas would represent. But the Chur is the white of Persia, and the Treles is the blue or the turquoise of Modai. So at the beginning it was the Chur which was in the ascendancy, Poras and Modai. However, by the end of the Megillah, it had changed round, and Mardar was in the intendancy, and then the name of the colours changed, the colour of the flag was replaced in that order. That's what he says. Dan Abramsky, who also had a question on the particular pasuk here, he says, what do we want to hear about this business? Halohem Kesuvim Asefi Divrei Amolam Lachim Mardar Poros. Who cares, he says. Who is interested? Since when has the Torah been a history book? Why do we need to know about Mardar Poros? Does anybody know about who these Medes and Persians are? What's the Torah telling us about it? It must have known it was a complete irrelevancy. He says, no. He says, you should know that is exactly the point of the Megillah. Don't treat the Megillah as a history book. It's not meant to tell us history. It's meant to tell us messages. As I said at the beginning, all the names have been changed. It's not trying to tell us a history. If that had been the case at all, it wouldn't have been in Kesuvim, it would have been in Nevi'im. It's in Kesuvim for messages. Now, he says, if you do want to know all about the history of the times, says that at the end of the Megillah, it tells us, listen, if you want to hear about Sokfu Gvurasa Porash Gidurus Morkaj Yomach Alohem Kesuvah Masefi Divra Yaman Ma'api Marev Poros, you look in the history books for that. This Megillah is not for that purpose. This Megillah is for Drush and for understanding things, and the Mardar and the Poros and the Poros and the Mardar have to be understood as the Gemara does understand it. I haven't got time for it now, but if you want to follow that through further, in the Talmud Ikrov Rabbi Kanievsky, he has a very interesting Pedrush trying to explain the Gemara as to why the change took place as well. But Abramsky's idea is you should not treat the Torah as a history book, and Esther Self is telling us that. I'd like to finish off with one aspect which I haven't mentioned yet, and that is, in addition to the ordinary letters, you've got different letters in the Megillah. You've got, for example, three small letters, which is the Tosh, Tof, Shin, Zayin. I'm not going to repeat that particular Dvarato. You all know about Nuremberg Trials. Mm-hmm. Anybody who doesn't know it, it's shooting, because everybody knows about the Tof, Shin, Zayin. I don't want to repeat it again. What is less known is that are two big letters. The Vav is not considered as a big letter. It's an elongated Vav, so we leave them all out. The two big letters are the Tof of Atichtav and the Ches of Chur. Together they make Tach. Everybody has heard of Gzeiras Tach V'Tat. The biggest single disaster in Jewish history before the Holocaust was the Chmielnicki pogroms, in which over 1 million Jewish people were killed, and that is Merulas in the Megillah in Gzeiras Tach V'Tof and the Ches, as is Tovshin Zion for the Nuremberg trials. But the letters don't only have a significance in combination, each letter is chosen for a purpose. So if we just quickly look at the Ches of Chur, the purpose of the Ches is either to show the 8th Big Day Kavuna, which was what was happening, the Hebrew Ash Commission using the 8th Big Day Kavuna, or it's Ches to show complete fear. The word Ches means fear, to show fear, or whatever other significance there might be in the particular letter of Ches at that particular time. The letter Tof of Vatichtov is to signify the end of Nevuah, the end of Tanakh. The Tof, Vatichtov, she wrote the last thing, and that Tof was written large to show that this was the soft pasuk that Megillas Esther was coming to the end of Nevuah. That's what the Tof is doing. The interesting thing that I noticed, however, is the only letter which has both large and small is the Tof, because the Tof of Vatichtov is large and the Tof of Parshin Dosor is small. So you've got a large Tof and a small Tof. You don't have that with any other letter. The letter you've got a small shin, you've got a large chest, but the only one which is both large and small is the Tof. And that shows a very, very interesting contrast. The number Tof throughout the Tanakh, apart from being the last letter, also represents the number 400. Wherever you come across the number 400 in Chumash, there's a fight. Wherever you come across the number 400 in Gemara, again and again, there is a culture clash. Rav Joe Freilich once pointed this out. We were learning in the Gemara about how the pig stuck its feet into the wall of the Choma Sushalayim, the Choma of the Beis Migdash, and Nizdazan Eretz Yisrael Arba Meyaz Parsa Al Arba Meyaz Parsa. Wherever you see the number 400, there is a culture clash. When Esau came to fight Yaakov, Arba Meyaz Eish Imo. When you find that in many different contexts where you have that number 400, there's a fight going on and it's a culture clash. It seems to me that this is the culture clash of the Megillah. The Tof is what we are trying to show that we are different from Amalek and what they stand for. Vatichtov, our Tov represents the writings of the Torah. That's what is the important thing. Their Tov is the Tov of Parshan Dosa, is the idea of selfishness and what all the sons of Ham represent. Therefore, their Tov is written small. It's a contrast between the small Tov of the Parshan Dosa and the large Tov of Vatichtov. This is the idea of the 400 being again this conflict between Mordechai and Haman. I know we're finished now. Just to remind you, I won't say it over again. If you remember, which is relevant in this similar context, last time on time before last, I told you about the 127 and my personal chiddush about the 127. If you remember, the whole of the Megillah is showing how Achashverosh wanted to destroy the Torah. He wouldn't allow them to have the Beis HaMikdash, and the suggestion is that the reason why the 127 is mentioned is because 127 are the Korbanos numbers. That's another idea of the numbers, whether the 1 and the 2 and the 7 are all the Korbanos. Nachashverosh didn't want to let the Israel have the Korbanos. So you see again and again these thoughts underlining the Megillah relating to the different aspects and the numerology. If you look at it carefully, it brings out many, many other secrets. But I don't think we're over on the time more than a minute, so we'll better stop there. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah.